sit right back, then you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Nice shooting, John. That seemed to be right on target.
Thanks, Stan. I love to put a bullet in the belly of that ship there. I'm John Kurlinski.
And I'm Stan Hudson. We want to welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle,
where we take lighthearted looks at the serious issues of evolution and creation. Lighthearted because, hey, that's the only way to take it.
That's the only way. And light hearts go with light heads. And that's what we've got here in the studio today. Isn't that right, John?
That's right. That's right. We have the privilege of recording here at Christian Record here in a different studio.
We're
grateful for our hosts today.
Absolutely. We want to thank them.
Make that up front and thank them.
All right.
So what are we doing today, Stan, now that we're here?
Well, we want to get the S out of a word today. We
want
to get
the S out of the word. It can't be food. No S's. What are you talking about?
We're not going from plural to single.
Oh.
No, I want to talk about a word that has been often, shall we say, going with the book of Genesis in chapter 3. Chapter 3, of course, talking about the fall of Adam and Eve, and we've often thought of
No,
working on it. It's the curse.
Curse.
The curses of chapter 3. And I'd like to take a look at them again, review them, revisit them, and maybe even try to throw an S out here or there.
Okay, well, let's... Take us there, Stan. What do you mean when you say the curses of chapter 3? Are you talking about what happened, what God proclaimed upon Adam and in the punishment he gave Adam and Eve?
Yeah, right. And the serpent, you know, there's sort of a long list of things where after Adam and Eve have sinned and fallen and so disappointed God after a beautiful and perfect world, he addresses first the serpent, then Eve, then Adam, with what we have traditionally described as the curses that would result from the sin.
Those are nasty things.
Nasty things.
At least they seemed quite painful.
That didn't sound like very happy.
You've been
things.
Bad boys and girls. Now you're going to pay for it.
Now you're going to pay.
Let me spank you.
Yes, and I think we probably all thought of the curses as being something of, well, at least natural causes or consequences, I should say, but all the way up to maybe including direct. Punishment.
Retribution, punishment.
God bringing
okay,
kind of
well,
the
what
battle
are you down. Thinking? Is it not that way? Or
well,
what?
You know, I want us to just kind of think about this in a different way today. Okay,
you start
and
thinking
let's see
funny,
how far we
know.
Get off into heresy or not.
Okay, but, well, let's dive right into heresy, Stan. No.
And here we go on another Sink the Beagle voyage.
No.
I'd like us to think of it, first of all, let's take a look at what it was that God said. First of all, he spoke to the serpent and told the serpent that, you know, you're going to crawl around on the dust and eat dust and you're going to crawl in your belly and now you're going to be deformed and like all the other animals, you're cursed above the other animals.
You mean
so
the
all
snake
the animals...
never could sort of evolve into like a lizard? he's kind of the lizard family.
There was this description, okay, this is going to be a consequence. And before he gets talking to Eve, he says to the serpent that, you know, there's going to be enmity between you and the woman. There's going to be this fighting. There's going to be between the devil and his kind of people.
Well, so what's new? Enmity between... Everyone in the women lately, isn't there? I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'll behave.
No, you won't. But anyway, there's this enmity that's predicted, and there's going to be, of course, this prediction of the Messiah coming.
Yes,
how did Eve figure this anyway? We got kind of a little view in chapter 4, don't we?
Well, yeah. Well, basically,
what did she think?
Well, God said, I'm going to, out of you, Eve, will come a seed, a redeemer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to deal with the snake. It's going to take the snake out.
Uh-huh.
And when she got there, when you go to chapter 4 in the Hebrew, a lot of translations have, like mine even has it in there. It says, now man had relations with his wife, Eve. That means they knew each other in the biblical sense.
Okay.
And she conceived and gave birth to Cain. And she said, and here's what my version says, in New American Standard, it says, I have gotten a man-child with the help of the Lord.
Yes.
But if you look at the New American Standard, at least it's honest enough to know and tell you when it's supplying words.
Okay.
And it has in there that with the help of was supplied.
Okay.
So what Eve was really saying,
yeah,
I have gotten a man-child, the Lord. She thought her firstborn son was that promised seed.
Oh, boy.
She thought her firstborn son was
Cain.
That promised Messiah.
And boy, was she ever disappointed later in that chapter.
Oh, man. He turns out to be the first murderer.
My goodness. And how bad things went from there that led up to the flood, the world becoming so violent filled that, you know. And so we saw this slide of human character. But, okay, back to the curse being pronounced specifically about, you know, the you, serpent, are going to be crawling around. Then he says this promise about the Messiah coming that would bruise the head of the serpent, but the serpent would bruise his heel in this conflict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, the death of the devil, but, you know, some injury to the Messiah. Okay, moving on from that, then God addresses Eve and says, okay, now, Eve, you're going to have pain in your childbearing.
Okay,
and you're
going to
have
like,
problems
like
with your husband, right? That's
yeah,
kind of a curse.
That's a curse, too.
That's a curse. And then he talks to Adam and said, Adam, you are going to have problems with the earth. You're going to try to raise food for your family, but it's going to be a struggle. You're going to have to deal with a broken world, a world that's not functioning the way it was created.
Yep,
and to try to take care of your kids.
And all kinds of sticky, pointy, ouch, things that hurt.
Exactly. Now, after that last pronouncement of the curse, and remember, there's been a flow here. We've often thought of curse, promise of Messiah, then curse, then curse, then curse. You know, I mean, it's like a whole bunch
downhill
of curses.
From there.
Yeah, we've often thought that this Messiah prediction was sort of like a pause in amongst the curses. I'd like us to look at that a little differently, because after the curses, now God makes them tunics or skin
to cover their nakedness.
Remember,
well, where did those skins come from, Stan? I mean, did he just kind of go into the wardrobe and pull out a couple shirts and jammies?
Well, no, I'm afraid not. The Hebrew makes it clear this is the skin from animals. This would be like lambs.
So what really is happening here then is God is very graphically demonstrating for Adam and Eve what it's going to take to save them.
Exactly.
He's introducing the system of sacrifice.
And death. This is the first thing that's ever died, as far as we know, in the whole universe. And they see it happening as a result of sin.
Can you imagine a little lammy walking around and, whoa, what's happened here?
Yeah, what happened to this
lamb? A lifeless thing.
The blood and everything.
An innocent victim had given up his life.
Mm-hmm.
And what
they could be clothed.
So they could be clothed.
Their nakedness could be covered, and it's a symbol, of course, of the righteousness of Christ that covers us.
And they could be accepted in his sight.
Exactly.
Mm.
So now here's the thing. It's right after that terrible sacrifice, that terrible death scene of these lambs dying for skins for Adam and Eve. Right after that, it's God saying, you know, Adam and Eve have now become like us, knowing good and evil, which is originally what even the devil was suggesting would happen. And it's almost like God saying, you know, there's something true to what the devil said. Now you know good and evil.
Unfortunately, what you thought, what the devil told Eve was it was going to be a good thing.
Yes.
But Eve is discovering that I know it now, but it's not a good thing.
It's not a good thing. And that's exactly, and John, that you're reading my mind. That's exactly where I think.
Well, it's a quick read.
It's a quick read. Yeah, it's not very, thanks. But, you know, and that's the thing. Why would God mention this right after this death of the lambs and so forth? To me, it's as though God were saying to Adam and Eve, now you're beginning to get it. Now you're understanding from my perspective the terribleness of evil. Now you're seeing what it's costing. Now you see the results a little bit. And all these curses are God's prediction saying, you are going to experience my suffering with this.
That's what will have to happen for allow me to redeem you.
Yes.
To allow me to redeem you, you'll have to experience what I am going through.
Absolutely.
And as a result of that, they do know, but the text says they know his goodness too. Despite that pain, they have the promise of the goodness of God for ultimate redemption in that.
Yes.
But it's not going to be a journey that you're going to necessarily want to sign up for.
And it's going to have terrible costs, especially to God himself, who provides the skins through his son dying on the cross.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this kind of sense that God is saying, I want you to understand from my perspective what sin does.
It's an appreciation. I guess, Dan, that would be a good thing and a healthy thing to know, because if once you know how bad sin is, it kind of gives you the inoculation, like, oh, I never want to get that disease again.
Yeah, exactly.
I never want to experience the brokenness of our relationship again.
Well, Scripture predicts that the suffering will not rise again a second time. And that's often been, shall we say, translated or understood to mean that sin will never arise again in God's universe. Well, how could that be, you know, predicted, or how can that be promised?
Guaranteed.
How can it be guaranteed?
Because there's a whole race of people who can say, been there, done that, don't want to go there again.
Exactly.
And an interesting thing is that all Christians really, though, are like Adam and Eve in the sense that they, too, are partakers of the sufferings of Christ. We have a torpedo text. We want to blow a hole in the idea, because one thing that evolution always has a difficult time explaining, Stan, is why suffering?
Why suffering?
They explain it as just the law of tooth and claw, the law of survival of the fittest.
If there's a God, why is this world so messed up and everything going wrong and everything? Well, here's something that's interesting from the Apostle Paul, who wrote this from jail.
While he was suffering.
While he was in the middle of suffering and with an uncertain future. This is what he says in chapter 3, verse 9 and 10.
What book are you in?
Philippians. I should probably say that.
Thank you.
Starting in verse 10. That I may know him, speaking of Jesus, that I may know him in the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being conformed to his death. Fellowship of his sufferings? How do we fellowship with God in sufferings?
We start seeing the pain that he went through, experiencing the level of pain that he feels and senses for the lostness and brokenness of this world.
Yes.
God no more enjoyed the death of that innocent lamb.
Yep.
And he even less enjoys cries out, why can I give you up, O Jerusalem? How can I give you up, O Ephraim? All throughout the scripture, God has a hard time letting things go that he loves and he has made. And that is a level of the pain he'd experience.
That's why you let Abraham, a little later in the book of Genesis, go through the pain of offering his son on an altar and almost taking his life before God stopped him. Mm-hmm. So God was saying to his friend Abraham, understand how it is going to be with me when I give my son, but nobody stops me from letting him die.
Where are you? The knife is not going to be plunged.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you see, God is letting us, and this is it, John, if I can summarize the thoughts here.
Sure.
That as Paul has figured out in his prison, God is allowing us fellowship with him into his most special place. You know, as a pastor, families allow us into their hospital rooms or in times of grief. It's a sacred place to share their suffering. God is allowing us into a very personal part of his own life and saying, you now are going to know good and evil as well.
And the good part is he's saying, I'm doing this for you.
Yes.
I'm going through this suffering because you matter more to me than my life itself.
And that's why a curse, take the S out,
is a cure.
Is a cure.
Thank you, Stan.
You're welcome.
I think that we hope that everyone will enjoy that and tune in again for a great
Sink the Beagle. Here on Gilligan's
Island. Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time to another episode of Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.